One of our state's most treasured resources is our state park system, and we love to go exploring here on Wisconsin Weekend. Thanks for being here. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With the parks and the forests and trails and recreational areas, it's really hard to prioritize nowhere to go. So we ask for your ideas. Which state parks have you already explored this fall? What did you see? Where did you go? Join in with your park experiences at 800-642-1234. And we call in some expertise. Missy Van Landit is External Relations Chief with the Parks and Rec Management Program at the DNR. Missy, happy fall. Welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's start with fall color. Where can we see it right now? What are you tracking?
Well, you know, actually, our friends at Tourism track it the best. They have a great fall color report if you go on Travel Wisconsin. Right now in the north, you know, we're seeing a lot of people going to Copper Falls State Park, Amnicom Patterson, the Northern Highlands, Flambeau River. So, you know, the northern third of the state is nearing peak.
So sometimes where you see the most kind of traffic in your visitor logs, you kind of can track that with the changing color.
Exactly.
You know, at the peak, why do certain parts of the state get more colorful? You know, why do we see that range across Wisconsin? Is it just has to do with the weather?
Part of it's the weather. I think part of it's the nature of what types of trees and shrubbery and, you know, plants and things that you're seeing. You know, this year they're saying, well, some places are going to have great color, but now that we've gotten all this rain and wind and this big cold snap we have coming today, that we might see a pretty muted color in the south. So, you know, it's important just to get out and have fun while you can, even if it is a little bit chilly, because you never know what those colors are going to look like.
When I think of you, I think of hiking. I'm going on hikes. And a lot of the fall color is you can get up high and see a nice overview of the trees below you and really a nice vista. What state park would you recommend for that?
You know, we have 16 state parks that have viewing towers. So one of my favorites, if you want to go central part of the state, quite honestly, I could talk about every part of the state and where to go, but central part of the state is pretty unique. We have Rib Mountain State Park there, and there's not only a viewing tower, but Granite Peak Ski Area runs their lift, so their chairlift. And so you can see fall color from a chairlift, which is pretty unique to Wisconsin.
So you can take the chairlift up and
yes.
then get off and do a little more hiking?
Exactly. So you do have to pay for the chairlift. So that's a fee through Granite Peak. But yes, you can actually get off at the top, hike around, and then hike up the tower and see it from an even higher point.
So which parks do have mountains? Is it just Rib Mountain or are there others?
Technically just Rib Mountain.
Okay.
But, you know, as you get closer to the UP, you'll see more of like that kind of mountainous range. But, you know, folks here too say like the Baraboo Hills are somewhat of a mountain. But, you know,
we can stretch our imagination.
Yeah, exactly.
We were just talking about Rochecree State Park, where you can go up those 303 steps. That would be a view.
That's a great view. You know, the interesting thing is Rochecree, one of the highest visitations actually this time of year. So there is a back parking lot. It's called our winter parking lot. If you look at the map online, it's a gorgeous 1 mile hike into the stairs and then the 303 stairs up. And those were rebuilt just a few years ago. So they're in really great condition and gorgeous views when you get to the top.
So you get this panoramic view, but on your way, you see petroglyphs.
Exactly. It's very interesting. It's a very neat little tucked in property that no one really thinks about. A lot of history there, a lot of geological history there. So it's a fun one to check out in the fall.
We're exploring Wisconsin state parks in the fall, and our guide is Missy Van Landit from the state DNR. Which state parks do you love to visit this time of year? Where do you enjoy hiking or watching the leaves change? Are you planning a fall camping adventure? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Take us to Lapham Peak in the Kettle Moraine State Forest in Delafield. They have an observation tower as well.
They do. And, you know, most observation towers are open year round. Obviously, fall is a big time of year, like you said, to see things from up high. The nice thing about Lapham is they have tons of wonderful trails that you can also be intimate with the fall color. And they have their Fright Hike, which is coming up next Friday, the 18th.
I love it. So is that hiking during the night or the
during
day?
During the night.
During the night.
And there's tons of volunteers that are already preparing for that hike.
So, so there will be I would assume some lights along the way, some
there's
flashlights.
Usually, they're candlelit or torchlit. And then, yes, we encourage you to bring a flashlight as well.
Devil's Lake State Park, always a gem. What do you love about Devil's Lake?
You know, I love hiking the bluffs, obviously. You know, that's the great thing. What I love to do is hike those bluffs any time of year. You get a completely unique experience, whether it's March or July or January or October. So hiking the bluffs is wonderful. And again, they also have a really neat hike coming up at the end of the month, a night hike to explore the park too.
These night hikes, that's really intriguing. We should, you know, go around and do some night hikes here. What about horseback riding in the Wildcat Mountain State Park? That's a possibility.
It is. You know, we've got horseback riding kind of spread across the state. Wildcat Mountain's probably our most popular park for that. They've got a great horse campground. The upper picnic area for the western side of the state is one of the most popular viewing areas for fall color, and just seeing kind of the Kickapoo Range in that area. So definitely worth a visit to Wildcat Mountain State Park and seeing fall color on horseback.
And if you don't have a horse, you go and you do a trail ride there? Is that, or do you just bring your horse, or how does that work?
Yep, you can come and do day use. So there are definitely parking lots there where you can just bring your horse and trailer and ride the trails and not have to camp as well.
All right. Well, let's move on to some more state parks. Get us to Anacon Falls State Park and the South Range.
So though, you know, obviously in peak color right now, and if you are into waterfalls in fall color, if you want to check out our webpage, we've got a really neat watercolor waterfall video that you can check out. But Anacon Falls is one of my favorite parks, and especially in the fall, they've got the historic covered bridge. I would go there and take your family pictures. It's very picturesque, gorgeous, and the fall color just really brings everything to life.
Well, with all this rain we've been having, what is the impact that on the falls?
They're roaring. They are absolutely roaring. We do have some closed trails here and there just because of mud, and I would recommend bringing your old shoes or your mud boots. But, you know, the color is great. The falls are roaring again. So wonderful pictures, just a great place to be.
Are any parks closed right now due to all of the rain or flooding?
You know, we have several parks that have segments of trails closed or areas of properties closed due to rain, but no wholesale closures at this point.
Yeah. So, and that probably too is kind of this longer fall has maybe impacted a lot of people being able to go out and explore some of these areas.
It has, you know, especially if people are a little bit more daring. You know, it's been cold, so, and it's been a little bit rainy, but that hasn't stopped people from coming out. And especially if you get a chance on, you know, like this week, we had great afternoons. We saw a peak in visitation this week, but getting out and seeing the fall color, enjoying the temperatures, and just embracing it.
Take us to Pattison State Park, way up in Superior, Manitou Falls.
Again, roaring with all the rain. You know, one of the highest waterfalls east of the Mississippi. So it's just a wonderful property. Their camping is still open. They've got their lake there, and they've got Big Manitou and Little Manitou and trails that surround them. So many viewing opportunities there.
There are dozens of incredible state parks. We're learning about them, and we can choose from them with DNR's Missy Van Landit here. She'll make sure we don't miss out on great hikes and breathtaking views this fall. Which state parks do you hope to visit before cooler temperatures set in? Which campgrounds are still on your bucket list this year? Do you have enough time before winter? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. There is more Wisconsin Weekend just ahead. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're exploring our state parks. There are dozens of them, and we're thinking about them in terms of great fall color, fall hikes, fun day trip ideas, fun festivals. What do you think after visiting our state parks? Do they have enough resources? What would you like to see change? What are your favorite outdoor adventures in the fall? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us all things state parks. That's at WPR Mornings. Missy Van Landit is from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and she stays with us as our guide. Let's go to Mike now, joining us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Mike. Where are you taking us?
Hi.
So I went to school in Eau Claire for a while, for college, and there's a really nice hidden gem of a state park called Altoona Lake State Park. It's just a wonderful area for picnicking, like grilling out, boating, whatever. And it's a nice one on the west side of the state. The other one that I enjoy this time of year is High Cliff and going up the tower, and you can just see down the entire length of Lake Winnebago and all the colors. It's just amazing.
Oh, wow. Mike, that sounds perfect this time of year, and especially being able to have such a great view of everything below. So how was that hike, though, getting up there?
It's pretty reasonable. And then the tower, it's a nice structure, and the stairs, it feels very sturdy, and you have a nice clear view. It's amazing. It's up on the northeast corner of the lake, and it's phenomenal.
Oh, wow. Missy, what do you think?
I love High Cliff. There's so much to see and do there. Most folks don't know that there's actually a marina there, so you can get there by boat as well. The tower is gorgeous. You know, lots of nice trails and shelters. I love looking at Lake Winnebago this time of year. There's such a unique, nice, bright yellow fall color to that part of the state. So definitely a good call, Mike, on High Cliff.
Yeah, Mike, thanks so much. Do you have any others on your bucket list that you want to get to?
Personally, I haven't been out to Devil's Lake in a number of years for the fall color, and so I'd really like to repeat on that one. I agree with what you said earlier.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the call. We had Randy who tweeted us and said, all the state parks have geocaching hides. What can you tell us about geocaching?
Well, geocaching is where you use essentially your phone or a device and you use GPS coordinates to find a cache or like a little treasure. So I have actually never done it. My kids have done it through their school, but they love it. And what I think is really neat is actually the Ice Age Trail Alliance is doing what they're calling cold caching now. So check it out on their webpage. It's where you actually don't find treasures. You find natural treasures like bluffs and cliffs and little lakes and moraines. So it's kind of neat.
And so would you go to their website or an app, or how would you find the cold caching?
You can go to the iceagetrailalliance.org, IATA.org, and check it out from there.
Photographers love water this time of the year, and those shots capturing the reflections of the changing colors in the water. What parks offer that combination of water and bright leaves and really good for photography?
Well, we've got tons of them with interior lakes. I would say Willow River State Park on the far western side is one that is very highly photographed. You can get there by either a short hike down a steep hill, which most folks say, it's a lot better going down than it is up. But you can also get there by a really easy, nice 1 to 2 mile hike. But what's neat about it is you can be intimate with the falls and you can sit kind of very near the falls. But there's also a stairway that you can go up and get an up high view of the falls as well.
So as you talk about the falls, what about Copper Falls State Park in Mellon? That is another area.
It is. And Copper Falls, again, one of my favorites. I probably say that about most of them, but Copper Falls is a beautiful park. You know, what's really neat, folks love the fall color there because of the redness of the water going through there. And there's just lots of opportunities to hike. There's also a tower there. So again, many different angles that in which you can see fall color at Copper Falls. You can get very close to the water. There's calm areas and very flowing little waterfalls. But you can also get up high and see just the breadth of the area up there, which is just gorgeous this time of year.
I haven't been there, but log buildings from the 1930s, the Conservation
yes.
Corps.
A lot of the buildings there are CCC. They've also got several bridges there. It's one of the areas along with Pattison Amnicon where there's a very strong presence in the architecture and infrastructure there from the CCC.
Yeah, rustic cabins for people with disabilities.
Exactly.
As well.
We've got several of those around the state, actually.
Yeah,
and again, if you go on our webpage and you type in Open the Outdoors on the search menu, it'll actually give you our accessible trails, accessible towers, and accessible cabins around the state.
And there are quite a few options for accessibility. you were just mentioning fall festivals, and state parks have lots of festivals going on right now. What are some of the ones coming up that you're looking forward to?
You know, most weekends in October, we have anywhere from 10 to 15 different events at our state parks. Many of them are co-sponsored by our friends group. So we're very lucky to have near 70 or so friends groups around the state. This time of year, these hikes and races actually are really big that serve as fundraisers for those. So there's so many, you know, coming up this weekend. If you're going to go to Willow River, they have their Willow River Trail Challenge this weekend. And Pottawatomie Park has their race as well, which is a big fundraiser for their friends group.
So racing, hiking at night, lots of different variations on what we can do at state parks.
You know, this time of year is also one where there's a lot of different stream ecology, flora and fauna hikes, looking at the fall color and guided hikes, as well as there are a few fall festivals. Most of those were the last couple of weekends. But there's so much to do in a variety of ways to do it in state parks in the fall.
When do the state parks shut down campgrounds for the winter season? What is that season like?
It varies. Okay. Some of the northern ones, as we are getting colder nights, are already shutting down. Most campgrounds, I would say, have some availability through October. And then from basically November on, we still have a lot of winter camping, but those sites are not reservable.
Yeah. So which campgrounds would you recommend for winter camping? Are there ones that stay open?
There are about 30 or so campgrounds that stay open.
Okay.
You know, the best thing to do is to just call your favorite one and see if they have sites. Most properties have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sites that they actually plow and may have electrical service to. Lots of other state parks have first come, first serve, where if you're willing to hike in through the snow and tent camp, there are sites available. So just call your favorite property that you want to check out, and they'll let you know if they've got sites.
We're traveling to Wisconsin State Parks, and our guide is Missy Van Landit from the State DNR. Still time for your questions and your favorite state parks to visit this time of year. We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Missy, as we talk about late fall camping and winter camping, it's certainly a different time of year for the parks. Is there anything that we should bear in mind as we use state parks later in the season toward winter?
You know, some of the areas have, like, our electrical is shut down, so some of them may not have as easily water access. So if you're familiar with a hand pump, you kind of have to work for your water if you're looking for that. Also, most of our vault toilets will be open, but it's a cold seat. So, you know, some of those things to keep in mind. Otherwise, the properties are open for winter. We encourage people to come out for winter use and do their snowshoeing and skiing, snowmobiling, whatever it is that they enjoy outdoors. You know, I think just being prepared and realizing that if you're willing to brave the elements, that there is an incredibly different side to state parks and trails that you can see in the fall and winter.
You know, it's funny when you start talking about hidden gems in our state, suddenly they no longer become hidden gems.
Yeah. exactly. Yeah.
But with that being said, are there any new discoveries you've made lately that are just that kind of blew you away?
You know, I've recently started discovering the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest, and, you know, it's one of the very complete properties where you can go and bike on a paved trail for miles. You can go boating. You can go ATVing, fishing, hiking, running, so camping in a variety of different ways to camp. You know, there's campgrounds there year-round that have very close access where your restrooms in the lake and the beach are right there. And there's other ones with remote access where you need to hike in. So I love the Northern Highlands year round.
Well, let's go to Cody now in Watertown. Hi, Cody.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Where are you headed to?
I am headed to work right now, but I wish I was headed to Carl Andre State Park because we moved to Watertown this summer, but we just came from Sheboygan, and we would always go to Carl Andre State Park whenever we had a free chance.
What do you love about it?
Just the lake there is just so beautiful because it's such a nice transition into, like, the deep part of the lake. So the color of the lake is always really nice. And the hiking trails through the sand is just something that reminds me of, like, North Carolina when I used to live there.
Oh, so, sure. Ah, wow.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, Cody, thanks so much, and have a great weekend. Missy, what about Carl Andre State Park?
You know, so and it's, we'll just correct him a little bit. It's Kohler.
Oh, Kohler
Andre, but that's
okay.
Sorry. No, and it's Kohler and Harrington are wonderful parks. And, you know, he is exactly right. There are trails and boardwalks that go through the dunes, and it gives you a completely different feel from anywhere else in the state. And it's right along Lake Michigan. And even though water levels are very high, there's so many lookout points for you to be able to sit and enjoy Lake Michigan this time of year. Mm. The campgrounds are still open. But my favorites are with both Kohler and with Harrington along Lake Michigan. Those boardwalks through the dunes are just a really neat and unique experience.
Well, thanks so much for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always great to be here.
Missy Van Landit is External Relations Chief with the Parks and Rec Management Program at the Wisconsin DNR. Coming up, we travel to Door County for a rare opportunity to see historic lighthouses. Do you live in Door County, or have you visited one of its lighthouses? What do you think people should know? Join in at 800-642-1234. There's more Wisconsin Weekend after this news update here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're on a lighthouse tour in Door County. It is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This weekend is a rare opportunity to see some of the historic lighthouses up close. Door County is home to 11, and the Fall Lighthouse Festival is a way to explore them by land and boat. What are your favorite lighthouses to visit in Wisconsin? What do you love about them? Have you visited a lot of lighthouses across the state? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kevin Osgood is Executive Director of the Door County Maritime Museum. Kevin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Well, lighthouses are such a rich part of Door County's history, and many of them were built soon after the Civil War. Can you take us way back in time and tell us how all of these lighthouses really came to be for the sailors?
Sure. We have to think back to what transportation was like in the early 1800s. We're so used to seeing the large freight trains, semi-trucks on the highway. Those things didn't really exist, not up in Door County, not in certain parts of the Midwest, and especially in northern Wisconsin. So the horizon on Lake Michigan and Lake Superior would just be filled with a forest of masts of schooners, just delivering goods, day-to-day goods to every port and every village, every settlement. The ships were coming and going constantly. As the population started to increase and the demand for the goods increased, a lot more ships are on the water, and there's a lot of treacherous waters, especially here on the Door County coastline, and the companies that own the ships were losing ships. The consequence of that, kind of a side attraction now, in Door County, as we're home to more than 250 shipwrecks in the shallow waters off Door County, and most of those are schooners from the 1800s. So in the early 1800s, 1820s, 1830s, a lot of the shipping companies were petitioning Congress to do something about it, and they had the power. And the first lighthouse was put on Rock Island, Pottawatomi Light, and that opened up in 1837, and it's still there. It's been restored. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a little bit of a trek to get there. Even once you're there, after two ferry rides, you still have to walk a mile and a quarter to get to the lighthouse, but you're literally stepping back in time. Nothing there has changed over time, and it looks exactly the same as it did. And the coast just has just numerous, numerous lighthouses that all have stories, because even once they were built, there were still shipwrecks, because sometimes we all know what the weather can do in northeast Wisconsin.
And we can sail along in a 19th century tall ship. What about the schooner cruise on the Edith M. Becker? What is that opportunity like?
You can. There's two departures for the Edith Becker. It's a tall ship, and they're both on Saturday. And they kind of go out and kind of take you back in time on the water. And you hear the same sounds aboard that ship that you would have heard 150 years ago. And you'll go out along the shoreline and by Peninsula State Park and get a really good look at Eagle Bluff Lighthouse. So the surrounding waters there, the lighthouse, the top of the bluff with the rocky shores, and it will really kind of set the tone and the feel for what it must have been like for those mariners.
Are any of the lighthouses in Door County in use today? What is their status?
They are all, except for one, is really still used as a marker of sorts for mariners. The only one that's not is the old Birdcage Light in Bailey's Harbor. That's now privately owned, but you can still see it from a couple of the tours. We have a couple of kayak expeditions that will take you by there, so you can see that light and see how things changed so rapidly. That light was built as an entrance light for Bailey's Harbor to guide ships in, but almost immediately after it went into service, again, the shipping captains were complaining that it's just not good enough. It's hard to see. It's not in the right place. So within 10 years, they had built Cana Island Lighthouse just a mile or so away from there so the ship captains could get a better, earlier look to be on the right course to get into the harbor.
Tell us about the kayaking we can do to see these lighthouses. What is that tour like?
Well, there's four of them. Two each day. One of them starts from Reinbold Creek in Bailey's Harbor, and it'll take you out to the Cana Island Lighthouse, and you'll see that from the water and be able to climb the lighthouse and have a box lunch on the grounds while you're there. So you get to do both. You get to paddle out to the lighthouse, see it from the water, which is a very unique experience, one I'm very jealous of. Some of my staff got to do that last week, and I didn't have yet to do, but the pictures they took are just fantastic. So the experience of paddling out and seeing it come into view, and then you can paddle up, pull your boats ashore, and enjoy your box lunch, take a tour of the grounds, and climb to the top of the lighthouse tower. So that's one of them, and those leave at 9 o'clock, both on Saturday and Sunday morning. And then there's another one, the Bailey's Harbor Lighthouse kayaking experience, and you're going to go also past the range lights in Bailey's Harbor, which are also 150-year-old pair of lighthouses that were built also in 1869, same year that Cana was built, to help guide ships into the protection of Bailey's Harbor, because that was a harbor of protection and storms that mariners could quickly get in. But in order to get in there safely, you needed to line the ship up on an exact compass course. And range lights are one shorter lighthouse and one taller lighthouse lined up just so when you're on the right course, you can see the lights right above and below each other. So you can paddle out to see those on that tour, as well as the Birdcage Light. So that's just another opportunity to see some very interesting places. Those leave in the afternoon on both Saturday and Sunday.
We're on a Door County Lighthouse tour with Kevin Osgood. He's Executive Director of the Door County Maritime Museum. You can join in. Have you visited lighthouses? Which ones have the best views? What ones do you appreciate in Door County? What about the lighthouse at Eagle Bluff or the range lights on Plum Island? What about lighthouses that fascinate you? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Kevin, we can also explore the Plum and Pilot Island lighthouses on a rafting tour of Death's Door. Take us to Death's Door.
No one's ever asked me to take them to Death's Door before. But I should point out that they are called an adventure rafting tour, but these are very large boats. It's not an adventure raft. You don't have to paddle through Death's Door. They'll take very good care of you on the Death's Door trip, and that will take you out.
I've never heard someone say they'll take very good care of you, throwing it right back at you. Carry on.
We've taken a lot of phone calls from people who say, I'm not quite sure about this adventure rafting. It's not rafting. You're not being shot down a fast-moving river. It's just an opportunity to move in. It's an open boat, but it's a very large boat, and they'll take you out through Death's Door to see the lighthouses, Plum and Pilot Island. The Plum Island tour, you can actually guided tour of the island from the Friends of Plum and Pilot Islands. You'll cover more than 2 miles walking around on the island, so bring good walking shoes. And it says not to wear shorts, but I don't think we're going to have a problem with that this weekend. No one's probably going to want to wear shorts. but it's an opportunity to get someplace and see things up close, peer in the windows. And there's a lot of hard work being done by the Friends of Plum and Pilot Island there to bring those buildings back and make that a really special place that's preserved for generations to come. So it's a very unique opportunity to go take advantage of.
Right. Plum and Pilot Island, this is quite rare to be able to go on the island and walk around.
It is. And they just have the most interesting history when you start to dig into it. we were very lucky recently that someone who had been out there several years ago in their own private boat found some lighthouse keepers' logs that were just through people that went out there and did things they weren't supposed to do, trespassed or whatever, but they stacked a bunch of these things outside in the rain. So most of them, more than half of them, were unreadable. But the others we've got and we're preserving, and just going through and reading the keeper's log there, the things they had to deal with, is just tells a story and kind of takes you back in time. So it's a very, very unique place that had a lot of challenges with the weather, just like all of the lighthouse stations up and down the coast. Cana Island has a history of they had a keeper that was just so frustrated with being there. An assistant keeper one day told the keeper that he was going to Sturgeon Bay, and when he got to Sturgeon Bay, he messaged back that he had resigned from the lighthouse service and he wasn't coming back to Cana Island. So, and that was just one day. And when you go through the Cana Island log, there's just interesting log entry after log entry of the worst storm ever on the Great Lakes. Water is running around the house, and then you turn the page and it's 2 weeks later and it's the worst storm ever on the Great Lakes. Water is again running through the house. And the next year it's the same thing. And we lost the boat today. And then 6 months later, the lighthouse service would bring them a small boat back. Just interesting, interesting stories that happened at these lighthouses.
And these logs are such a window into that history. You know, you can really find a day-to-day almost diary of what was happening in this area.
Right. And one of the most amazing stories is to go back to Pilot Island, and we'll go back to 1892 in October. And we all know what the weather is like in October and November here on the water and the stories that come from it. The Pilot Island lighthouse keeper at that time was Martin Knudsen. And within the span of basically 2 weeks, two different schooners wrecked off the shores of Pilot Island. And Marty Knudsen didn't hesitate, and he took a rowboat out into the storms and rescued the crews of both schooners. And for that, and he brought them ashore. He was keeper of Pilot Island between 1880 and 1897. But when this happened, he received a life-saving medal from the Life-Saving Benevolent Association of New York. And this is a gold life-saving medal. And on the back of it, it says, presented to Martin Knudsen, lighthouse keeper, Pilot Island, Lake Michigan, in recognition of his courage and humanity in rescuing at great personal peril the crews of the wrecked schooner Gilmore and Nichols, October 1892. So within 1 month, he rowed out twice into storms of the Great Lakes, rescued schooner crews, and he has this gold life-saving medal, which when we researched this medal, found out that that's basically the civilian equivalent in 1897, of the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Wow. We're learning about the lighthouses in Door County with Kevin Osgood as our guide. He's head of the Door County Maritime Museum. You can join in on lighthouses at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this Wisconsin Weekend in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're exploring the 11 historic lighthouses in Door County, hearing the stories, finding out about these buildings, how to get there. And the Door County Maritime Museum celebrates these lighthouses, offers tours during the Fall Lighthouse Festival that is this weekend. Do you have a favorite lighthouse in Door County? What about Bailey's Harbor Range Lights or Pottawatomie Light on Rock Island? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kevin Osgood stays with us. He's the head of the Maritime Museum in Door County. Kevin, you know, Lake Michigan saw record levels this year. In July, it was the highest it's been in 33 years. What kind of impact has that had on tourism and seeing these lighthouses?
I don't think it's slowed tourism in the least. It's been a challenge, though, specifically at Cana Island, because Cana Island, with this high water, is an island once again. A lot of people have come to the island, and when they get to the end of the road, so to speak, and typically there was a causeway that in years past has been dry, and you could walk across this causeway to Cana Island. Well, 3 years ago, there was about 6 inches of water over the causeway 4 years ago, 6 inches of water. So the museum purchased a John Deere tractor and an old hay wagon. And for those who didn't want to get their feet wet, we could take them across this little bit of water on the causeway. Now there's almost 3 feet of water on that causeway. We had to get a bigger tractor. We had to raise our hay wagon almost a foot just to be able to get people across. Now the water at 3 feet isn't really not that terribly deep. But again, that weather of Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes. So when the waves kick up and the wind kicks up, it's just too much and we can't take folks across. So we haven't been able to bring as many people to the island this summer. And it's been a bit of a challenge, but when the weather does cooperate, the people come out. And it's fun. I went back through just yesterday ahead of speaking with you to look through the keeper's log at Cana Island. And there's several references to the water levels. Back in 1924, they tried to put some gravel down to make that causeway a road. And it says September 29th, finished hauling 100 loads of gravel to the station to help create the causeway. But then there's a note several months later that says the causeway is gone. The lake took it back. It's just Mother Nature. And here on the Great Lakes, it's just what happens. And that, while high water has been challenging, it is something to see, because if the wind is coming from the right direction at Cana, the waves go around the island and then cross and make an X pattern as they break and come ashore. So it's a very unique opportunity to see a phenomenon in nature that doesn't happen everywhere. And that's really how the causeway has sort of stayed a causeway over the last 150 years, is because those waves that cross on the backside of the island deposit rocks and sand and everything else there along that stretch. Now, it will move every day that our crew goes to the island. They put on a pair of waders and first take a look, because the little sandy beach where the tractor pulls up moves. And over the last 2 weeks, it's moved twice. With the different storms that we've had. First, it was on the far left side of the landing, and most recently on the far right. And after the last storm, it's kind of mixed back to the center. And they'll walk across to open the island and make sure that there hasn't been some trench or a boulder deposited right in the middle of where we drive the tractor, and we have to change course. So it's an ongoing thing, but again, it's exactly what everyone's been having to deal with there for 150 years. Especially the keepers and assistant keepers and their families that live there, or the Genda family who lived there in the 1970s and 80s with their entire family out on the island. And this past year, we celebrated the 150th anniversary of Cana, and we had more than 20 descendants of keepers come out to that birthday party on the island.
Oh, and how special.
It was great. And talking to the Genda family and their children who grew up on the island, there's no indoor plumbing. So they had the same privy that the lighthouse keepers had in the 1860s and 70s was their privy in the 1970s and 1980s. And they would often be using that when guests would be walking across the island. They would take their baths in Lake Michigan. They just have some amazing stories to tell.
Oh, Kevin, thank you so much for sharing this history, and good luck with the lighthouse tour this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Kevin Osgood is Executive Director of the Door County Maritime Museum, and we have a link to the festival on our website. Visit WPR.org/mornings. And for disclosure, the Door County Maritime Museum is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Just ahead of homecoming, here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about University of Wisconsin's marching band.
The bass drums, the tubas, the shenanigans, the UW marching band is iconic. And this year, they're going through some big changes. For the first time in 50 years, they have a new band director, Dr. Corey Pompey. WPR's Tim Peterson caught up with a pair of the band's veterans at a rehearsal to hear about these changes. He spoke with drum major Justine Spohr and assistant drum major and trombone player Grant Pettick.
And one, two, ready, and.
We'll typically start our rehearsals with some warm-ups and stretches, so we'll do some breathing exercises.
Air! Take in all the air!
Just get a few notes out on the instruments.
Trombone!
Then we'll move into some stretching, because what we do is very physically athletic and intensive, so we want to make sure we're well warmed up for that.
Who?
Who's my partner?
Our marching step is so different than anything you might have learned in high school.
I think that it's very difficult to do our step and play at the same time. It's very athletic. The step is very jarring.
I think it's much more exciting, energetic, engaging. Insert positive adjective that starts with E here.
And I think we've been working this year to kind of try and smooth out some of the playing while still maintaining the energy and the athleticism in the step. So I think this year and moving forward, hopefully our sound will be a little more powerful. Then we'll usually do a brief music rehearsal. And then we'll move into our pregame practice. So that's the show that we do before the game starts. So we'll run all of the Wisconsin classics, like On Wisconsin, Songs to the Wisconsin, If You Want to Be a Badger, things like that. And then we'll move on to our music for the halftime. And then we'll start with a run-through, and then we'll kind of work it set-by-set, moving from formation to formation, do a little bit of touch-up and cleaning. And then end the rehearsal with another full run-through of halftime or some conditioning drills. Mike's music that he selected in previous years was maybe a little less recognizable to some of the people in the student section. And I think some of the new music that we're getting is moving into the 21st century. The thing that makes me most excited about being a part of this ensemble is just the energy and enthusiasm and passion that every other person has here. You wouldn't be able to do this step and be a part of this band if it wasn't something that you really wanted to do.
You know, at the end of the day, no matter the score, we go out there on Saturday and we do the best that we can do. So as long as we feel like we've put out a good show and done what we know how to do really well, that's all we can do. Obviously, it's nice if the score comes out in our favor, but it doesn't take much for me to get everybody excited on game day. It's just the way we are.
Even if it's like 6 a.m. bus runs?
Even the 6 a.m. bus runs to 2:30 a.m. bus runs back. I mean, we got the energy. It feels very special. There's not a day in rehearsal or game days or even days when I'm not at rehearsal that I don't feel extremely lucky to be doing this. Extremely blessed to have this opportunity and to have met the awesome people that I have, to be playing the music that I really have come to love and appreciate. And there's really nothing like being able to go out and celebrate our football team, as well as our basketball team, hockey team, volleyball team, all of that stuff. It's just really special to be able to do what we do.
Tim Peterson brought us a story about the UW Marching Band. He's a producer for WPR Central Time and played in Marching Band at Northwestern. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.